Good evening, everyone. You've tuned in to Paradigm Shifters, and I have a wonderful paradigm shifter on the show tonight, somebody who's been a guest with us several times before, and boy, am I ever grateful about that. Someone who brings to us the reflection, the astrological reflections that we're feeling here on the planet, in the world economics, the global economics and politics situation, and probably everything else. Linda Sherman, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you.
You're
glad
fresh
to be here.
You're fresh from coast to coast. I'll bet you that was a rush, was it?
It certainly was.
Well, I feel honored to have such an important visitor to the global networks on my show. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Veronica.
Now, you know, I was in preparation for our show. I was looking through What Next, A Survival Guide to the 21st Century. Again, this is not the first time I've been through it. And one of the things I wanted to bring up right at the very beginning was, what are the astrological influences that are, say, designating this incredible economic debacle that seems to be going on these days? Is there such a logical relationship, or can you tell us about that?
Absolutely, Veronica. I think that the lead-off planet, I mean, the three outer ring planets, which are Pluto, even though Pluto, by the way, was demoted to a dwarf planet by astronomers who still argue, but he packs a wallop. He symbolizes great concentration of power.
That reminds me of the Catholics dropping off a bunch of saints that many of us counted on for years.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Pluto is hardly a saint. He's more of a sinner, I would
say. Well, he certainly is a big challenger, isn't he?
Yes, he is. But Pluto and Neptune and Uranus, the three of what we call outer ring planets. And, of course, there's been some new planets who have been discovered in the early part of the century that I give some brief discussion to in my book. But these point to major, major changes in the cycles of human history.
Okay.
And I feel that the lead-off to this great, what I call it, the second Great Depression, but it's even more than that. I call it the disestablishment of the establishment, is Pluto traveling from Sagittarius into Capricorn, and will be in Capricorn for a long, long time. I'm looking at my ephemeris to get the exact. He will be in Capricorn back and forth until late January of 2024.
That's a long time to put us through the challenging of our, well, you talked about it as reflective of a huge change in the system. Is that right?
Exactly. We have to remember that Capricorn is symbolic of the established institutions in any society. Number one, it's government, how a nation is governed, or nations in the plural, and the structure of that government, everything from the local level of the police force to the federal levels of the IRS and the judicial and executive and legislative divisions, at least in our government. In the old days, it was the kings and the monarchs. And to give you a concept, I think Pluto is the lead-off planet, which, when it reached the end of Sagittarius and went into Capricorn, was when the stock market crashed. When it was hovering around that area in 2007 was when the housing market started crashing.
But wait a sec. When I remember you telling us before that a lot of the stock market crash was around derivatives, which were no substance. So it seems like it's sort of stepping from the idealism of Sagittarius into the needing the structure of Capricorn. Is that right?
You're exactly right. I think that Capricorn deals almost with what I call R&R, ruthless realism.
That, show me the money.
Right. That's a very good illustration, Veronica, because Sagittarius is by nature a highly speculative overly optimistic sign. We love the optimism and energy of Sagittarius, but it can go absolutely take itself off the cliff, thinking it can soar forever. Mm-hmm. And the derivatives, speculative type of things that were going on for so long escalated as Pluto went through Sagittarius. And the and remember that derivatives really have nothing backing them. As we've talked about, the derivatives are various forms of bets. A call bet is a bet that something will go up. Mm-hmm. For instance, that a stock will go up, or a commodity will go up, or a currency will go up.
Or can it also be a bet that it would fail?
Yes. The other side is a bet that it will go down. And that is called a put option. There's a call and a put. The calls are the bets. Now, you, a derivatives who, in a sense, are what I call more regulated and better understood and appear on exchanges, at least have to have something behind them. The big problem has been what we call the over-the-counter derivatives, which are really basically not regulated and have nothing behind them. And one of the problems with derivatives is that the number one problem is they have escalated beyond belief. They have always had a place in the scheme of the economy as a hedge. You've heard the term hedge fund. Mm-hmm. And so the obviously hedge funds were loaded with derivatives. In the days, the early days when we had the farmers used to, say you were a farmer and you had a crop of soybeans, and you were concerned, you know, that you might not make so much money, that you might have a flood or you might have a drought or something. So you would buy a put on your own crop, giving you a kind of insurance that if the crop failed, you would actually make money. So it became a kind of insurance policy for a while when it was, they were few and far between and they were used intelligently. I'm not totally against derivatives trade. But in the 90s and into the first part of this century, it went absolutely berserk. Because at the end of the Clinton years, laws were passed and dropped that got rid of so much regulation in the banking sector. Glass-Steagall was gotten rid of, which originally came from the First Depression and separated commercial banking from financial banking, which could have protected us from this terrible real estate crash and this irresponsible subprime lending and financialization of mortgages. And number two, the so-called Commodities Modernization Act, which took restraints off of derivatives trades. And now, according to The Economist in a recent article, the over the counter derivatives market, the notional value, according to the Bank for International Settlements, is $604.6 trillion.
Without any substance.
With nothing behind it.
Gosh.
Nothing required to be behind it. Now let's look at a recent a catastrophe that's still fresh, I'm sure.
But what I'm just thinking about is a lot of people who are, in quotes, rich in stocks and actually have nothing.
Yes.
Okay. You may carry on.
Yes, there are. The problem with this is, let's take our favorite bad guy, and that's Goldman Sachs.
Okay.
Now, Goldman Sachs went through the years encouraging the real estate bubble. They were involved in it somewhat. They were encouraging it, the giving away, or I say giving away, allowing the mortgage contracts, subprime mortgages, which we all know about, and we all know about the bubble and it's crashed. So they encouraged all that. But at the same time, they bought puts on the mortgage market.
Oh my Lord.
That the mortgage market would crash. And the so-called counterparty for those puts, because you have to have someone on the other end that takes the other position. And the counterparty, the guy that took, was AIG. So when the real estate market crashed, all of a sudden, AIG, which was the counterparty, owed billions of dollars in payments to Goldman Sachs on their puts. You see how corrupt and bad this is getting?
Yeah, really.
So what happens is AIG, the biggest insurance company in the world, is threatened with insolvency and failure. So guess who bails out AIG?
Goldman
the taxpayer.
Oh, the taxpayer.
The TARP money went to bail out AIG so that they could pay back Goldman Sachs. So what we have is a policy, because we have the Federal Reserve banks. We have the Federal Reserve System, which is not really government. It's private banks, but it's locked into our government, that promises to pay back. In other words, the same thing, like we have a certain amount of money insured. Our bank deposits are insured by the FDIC, which I believe that is something that should definitely be there. Well, the Federal Reserve entity developed through the years up to the present time is now saying that if somebody goes out on a limb and buys billions and billions or hundreds of billions of dollars worth of derivatives and they fail, the poor beleaguered taxpayer and the feds through the Federal Reserve will bail them out. So all of these people in these nations, many of which are now jobless or barely making a living or are losing their houses or struggling and going along, and their taxpayer money helped to subsidize Goldman Sachs.
Wow. Makes my mind swirl.
And recently we had Chris Dodd, who is leaving at the end of the year as senator of Connecticut, who's been a senator for a long time. And then he presented a bill to Congress to try to reform this. But it really is the big thing we wanted was, let's create an independent entity to regulate derivatives and all of this stuff, other than the Federal Reserve, which are actually private banks who have a conflict of interest in all this, and they're perfectly happy to use taxpayer money to bail out their friends, right?
Oh, of course.
So Chris Dodd had it, but this so-called independent entity now, because of pressure on him, has to be a subsidiary or accountable to the Federal Reserve. So it's meaningless. So this is the power of the financial cabal, the big financial entities. I call them the banksters.
The banksters, yeah. I think what's confusing me is if the taxpayers are supposed to come up with the bailout, people are being scoured. Nobody.
oh, they are.
I mean, what kind of tax money?
The point is that when you look, now they're complaining, they're saying, well, we got to cut Social Security and Medicare. The Social Security Trust Fund should be solvent for 100 years.
Okay.
What happened was, in order for the government to pay for other programs, they have IOUs. They, quote, borrowed money from the Social Security Trust Fund,
which was basically from the taxpayers, right?
Right. Because you and I have been paying into that since we got our first job.
Right.
Okay. It's a federal form of insurance to keep us from going into poverty in old age, which was conceived of in the last Great Depression by Roosevelt and the Congress at that time. Now they're complaining, well, we just can't keep that going. You know, we're going to have to do something about that. But, well, and part of it is true, because people are living longer and more people are going to be collecting from it. But still, it should be solvent the way it was originally set up. But through sleazy schemes and everything else, with buying out our Congress and our legislatures through the years, This money has been switched around to other things. So the Social Security system is filled with a whole lot of IOUs. Now, if the government is going to continue to exist, it will have to make good on that. So, and they will probably change, move up when you can collect Social Security another year to keep the system going. Hmm. But the point is, here we're battling over something like that, which is just for the average man and woman, you know, the hardworking, what we call, I don't think we have much of a middle class anymore, but that's what we're called, through the years. And yet, 600, look here, $604.6 trillion are being traded in over-the-counter notional derivatives and things of this nature, which the suggestion is that if they went the wrong way, the taxpayer would be bailing them out. The first thing like this happened in 1998 when a major hedge fund failed because they bought calls on the Russian ruble. And Russia failed in pretty much. It crashed in 1998, their economy. So at the time, Greenspan, Rubin, and Summers, who is a big advisor to Obama right now, they bailed out that hedge fund that had lost hundreds of billions of dollars on those bad calls. And that set a precedent. You see, if you want to gamble this way, if you want to do this and you have the money to do it, go ahead, but don't be insured by the poor, struggling, working taxpayer.
Right. That makes sense.
I agree that we should insure our bank deposits, you know, up to a certain amount, $100,000 or $200,000 or whatever they insure it for today if you're FDIC insured, because the whole system would, no one would put their money in a bank anymore if they didn't, you know. That's fine. We know that. But to insure this casino, gambling in the hundreds of trillions, we even think that the total number of there's the visible transparent derivatives and then there's the over the counter, the combination of those two is up around a quadrillion dollars. And
but so, wait a minute, this is all in the hands of a small number of people, is it not?
Basically, yes. And yes, and they have over the years paid for the campaigns of our presidents, our senators, our representatives, our government officials. And as some people say to me, well, what kind of world, how do you want to end this this cartel of plutocrats controlling the world and the neoconservatives, let's just have big corporations and financial entities doing anything they want and making huge amounts of money and scamming and scheming away the lives and the fortunes of everybody else.
And how do we end all that?
That's
a simple question, eh, Linda?
Okay, well, you know, I think there are a lot of things we need to do. But number one, and I don't know how this is going to be done, but number one, as Jefferson would want, Thomas Jefferson, Ben Franklin, and many of our founders, what you do is take all money out of campaigns that is private. You simply have a fund set up for three major televised debates, and you let candidates present their cause, and a small amount for traveling to crucial places, it does not cost that much to have a website. Things like this, and take it out, saying no private money goes into any campaign.
Now, that would be wonderful.
This would take all private money out of campaigns, period. And then we might have a shot at getting our democracy back. Now, recently in January, under the full solar eclipse conjunct Venus, that was a very important date. January 15th, the Mercury went direct on Pluto, and we had this eclipse. Well, a couple of things. Greece failed. I predicted a major currency crisis, mm-hmm. and Greece essentially announced that they were in sovereign wealth failure and that their currency was. And so we've been talking the European Union, trying to get together and bail out Greece, and, you know, they failed. Iceland failed last year. Portugal and Spain and Ireland are all on the verge of failure.
And that's all because of the same thing with the markets.
Well, I got to tell you.
And the mortgage stuff.
Recently, the financial ambassador from Greece, I believe it was last week, was over here in the U.S., had a private meeting with President Obama, and he appeared several times on our news channels. And he said that their failure wasn't about their form of Social Security or all of these other things that the right-wingers love to talk about. It was about derivatives.
Thank you.
It was about derivatives.
How did people respond?
Well, the problem is, this is why I love to appear on shows like you and Coast to Coast in any place that I can, is the public at large knows little or nothing about this. You mm-hmm. may as well be talking to them in Swahili.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is how these guys get away with this, is that the public at large doesn't know what the heck is going on because they're not educated to know what's going on.
Plus, we get snippets here and there. We don't get a whole lot of news.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And there are wonderful things that we can get, newsletters that we can get online. There's PBS, which is excellent, has shows. I mean, there have been a number Frontline and Bill Moyers have interviewed people and shown how the finances have been manipulated, the economy has been manipulated.
Yeah, Bill Moyers gets in a real state about it, doesn't he?
Yes, he does.
And he's so, yeah, he's a wonderful interviewer.
He's one of my great heroes.
Me too, mine too.
And I don't know whether you heard about Frontline did a show about a month ago on Brooks Lee Bourne. Government head of the commodities, she was the head commodities regulator during the Clinton years, mm-hmm. the 90s. And she saw the danger in this derivatives trade and what was going on in what you call the shadow economy of these over-the-counter derivatives and these big entities like Goldman and J.P. Morgan, Chase, you know, trading these things. And she saw, oh, my God, this could take down our entire economy. This is back in the 90s now.
Mm-hmm.
And so she carefully researched all this and tracked down what was going on and presented this to Congress. And Robert Rubin, who was a former Goldman Sachs guy, later Citibank guy, you know, big, powerful plutocrat.
Mm-hmm. Plutocrat.
Exactly. Isn't that interesting? That's not an astrologer's term.
I know, but it's perfect.
The Plutonians, the plutocrats, and he, Greenspan and Summers, but mainly Rubin, who was secretary of what I like to call secretary of the treachery at the time, really took her down. And she warned and warned, and he took her down, and he convinced that there was nothing to this, that we had to deregulate, not regulate, that she should. And finally, she resigned her position under pressure. And that story was a Frontline show on PBS, all of that. And, of course, right after that, that giant hedge fund in 98 crashed.
Mm.
And taxpayer money had to go to bail them out.
Mm.
Or they Greenspan and Rubin and Summers got their pictures on Time magazine that year for having saved the global economy by bailing out that hedge fund.
Well, you know, why is it people don't get all berserk and angry about these things? Is it that the power that they have is so global and so amazing, the three that you mentioned and others who are in what we call the oligarchy?
Yes. You see, back then, my husband and I were doing research into this. My husband got curious why the price of gold was artificially in a terrible bear market mm-hmm. when it should have been up. And we found out that the big three, Greenspan, Rubin, and Summers were actually manipulating the price of gold and keeping it down so people would rush into the dollar. And we started to subscribe to some newsletters by gold people who were really telling us the truth about how sleazy and crooked and through the use of derivatives that these people were manipulating the economy so that the guys at the top could get really rich. I mean, unbelievably rich.
Which they are. They did.
Yes. And so that we, well, but when we had conversations about these with people, people just stared at us. As I said, we may as well have been speaking Swahili.
And why do you think it is? Is because people do not want to know that the world that they're trying to keep together is going to shake apart. Is that what it is? I think
exactly.
That's it.
I think that there, and we have to look at what human nature is and has been through mm-hmm. the ages. Most people, frankly, are caught up in just raising their families, paying their bills, you know, and worried about whether their health insurance, which we're dealing with now in a big way, is going, they're going to be able to afford it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just going on with living their lives. And they don't, and the media that used to be back in the 60s and the 70s, boy, I was proud of our media back then. You had the Walter Cronkites and you had people, Eric Severides and people like
really
this.
Challenging some of the things that were going
exactly.
on.
Exactly.
Yes.
You had television during the Vietnam War.
Right.
They were out there with their cameras when there were demonstrations, when there were anti-war rallies mm-hmm. and demonstrations. When Bush, right before Bush went to war in Iraq in 2003, there was not one mainstream television that went into where all that winter, all of these people, hundreds of thousands of people, were peacefully demonstrating in all of our major cities against going to war in Iraq, which turned out to be a horrendous disaster.
And you didn't hear anything about it, not much anyway.
You heard nothing. Compare that with the 60s. Where the cameras were out there and you saw it on the evening news.
Mm-hmm.
And when the public is exposed, the media is a great tool to the truth. When they're really told things, you have a successful democracy. People have a chance to react. But the mainstream media today is more or less a tabloid display.
Mm-hmm. That not interested, you mean, in putting real information
forward? Well, it's owned by, the media is owned by five major corporations.
Okay.
And they want to get their tax breaks, and they want to have still continue to trade derivatives, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So it is not in their interest to really report the truth. And the other thing is the nation itself has been dumbed down. Our education system does not educate people to deal with the realities that they have to deal with in today's world.
And Linda, my big pet peeve is that the food supply has dumbed down people's brain potential.
I
and the skinniness
right
is making the women
it. Again,
stupid.
It's out of control. Big monopolistic corporations who put things like high fructose corn syrup
in everything.
Everything. The industrialization of farming and mass manufacturing of food has created for us a nation of obesity.
Right.
And the nations that are in good shape, the Asian nations, the minute they adopt our diet, they go the same way we do. So it's not a genetic thing.
Yeah.
And
I don't think it's just the obesity. I think it's what it does to our brains with the ADD, ADHD, Alzheimer's, all that stuff.
Absolutely. But again, you have a situation where when you deregulate, when big monopolistic corporations buy out the government, you get legislation that favors them so they can get away with things, they can cover up things. See, it happens that these things are cheap,
mm-hmm.
and people will eat them because they taste sweet or they taste enhanced or whatever. So they hook you on this stuff.
And also, Linda, I've noticed, and I don't eat that stuff, but if I do, it's about 3 days before I stop wanting more of it.
Right. Oh, you absolutely can get, I believe, there's a form of addiction.
There is, yeah. And it's the sugars and salts.
But again, this is an example of the New World Order that just wants big corporations, whether they're big food, big pharma, big oil, or big banking, or whatever, to have no regulation, to be able to do anything they can get away with without a constitution or anything. And this, what I was talking about earlier with this past January, the Supreme Court ruling right around the same time of that eclipse was, and many, even Obama stood up at the State of the Union and spoke about it. He's now at war with the Supreme Court. Thank goodness he spoke up about it.
Mm-hmm.
They ruled essentially that is freedom of speech for the big corporations, even foreign corporations, to be able to put ads in our media, on television, on the internet, in magazines, for a candidate without restraint.
That is incredible, isn't it?
Without restraint. So it's whoever has all the money can flash all the ads. And as we know, a lot of people who don't know very much, who have not been educated, who, as you said, their brain capacity has been, I call it outloaded, by a bad lifestyle, they don't even know how to think about this. They just react to these ads.
Mm-hmm.
We know the power of propaganda. So it this ruling, we have this is Bush's legacy.
Mm-hmm.
It's his right wing. I never met a corporation I didn't love, Supreme Court. And so Obama stands up and said, this is terrible. You know, he stood up at his State of the Union and he made Justice Alito actually mouthed lying. He's lying, you know, and Justice Roberts, the Chief Justice recently made a speech that he thought it was terrible that Obama said this and the Congress applauded him.
What did he say?
He actually, if you saw the State of the Union speech, he said that he thought that that ruling was outrageous, pretty much. I can't quote his exact words.
He was in disagreement and so
people. He was in absolute.
Yeah.
He says this gives the big corporations the power, limitless power, to put ads anywhere in whatever candidate they favor. And the candidate they favor is the one they bought, the candidate they bought, and so that will support them, not the people.
Mm-hmm.
We got to understand, it's really unfortunate that it's the corporations versus the people, because corporations ideally should be a part of the people.
Right.
And it should be, you know, supply and demand and whether your product works or not. But the financial entities, it doesn't matter what, the same CEOs are still in these, heads of these giant financial companies.
It's really.
They're collecting bonuses.
Mm-hmm. And the derivative trade is way, way bigger than it was when everything collapsed, right?
Right.
Yeah.
It's still not regulated, not controlled. And Chris Dodd, who originally, a couple of months ago when he presented this idea, I thought, oh, thank goodness, he's leaving, so he wants to leave a decent legacy, you know. But it was, you know, completely, the rug was pulled out from under it when this so-called independent agency became under the auspices of the Federal Reserve. It's interesting because you take, people like Dennis Kucinich, who's a left-wing liberal,
mm-hmm.
and Ron Paul, who is a libertarian. They both agree on these things. They're in agreement. About these things.
They're agreeing with the Supreme Court decision?
No. They're agreeing with Obama. They're agreeing that this ruling was a complete disaster.
Well, everybody I've talked to agrees that it's
removed. That the banksters should not be bailed out. They should be allowed to fail. And you know, it's interesting. You will hear people on television that are like, with religious fervor, talking about free market capitalism and Adam Smith.
Mm-hmm.
This brings me back to Pluto in Capricorn. The last time Pluto was in Capricorn was the American Revolution, which is very interesting because taxation without representation, the Boston Tea Party, now we've got tea baggers talking like idiots who are not, I can't condemn all the tea baggers. I'm not here to do that. I think the tea baggers are actually just discontented people, and they actually come from different places.
They're well, what about the coffee party? Have you read about that?
Yeah, I've heard about the coffee party. I think this is healthy.
I do, too.
Whether I agree or disagree with a position that a tea bagger takes, I think it's healthy that people are saying, stop the insanity, listen to us, no matter what they're saying. But you'll hear the free market capitalists, they talk about Adam Smith and the Wealth of Nations. Well, at the same time we were revving up for the American Revolution, Adam Smith wrote The Wealth of Nations. Mm. Now, what he was writing, he basically, he did so in response to the organized cartels of rich merchant elites and monarchies who dominated all trade and commerce. And he was actually against monopolies. He believed that capitalism, the companies should remain small and competitive with one another.
So where did it turn around, and what's wrong?
Well, and people, our founding fathers were at odds with one another over this thing. You take the Alexander Hamilton people and then the Thomas Jefferson people. And Alexander Hamilton was in favor of a central bank, and he was kind of in favor of the ruling financial elites. He even sort of wanted Washington to become a king. One of the great, great moments in world history was when George Washington turned down the notion of being a king.
Oh, wow.
And said, no, I was here to be elected president. Because when the war ended, the Hamilton people and a lot of people said, we want to crown you king. He said, no way, Jose. In other language, of course. What a great moment. I mean, I look at the character of the founding fathers. They were humans with flaws. They all spatted with each other and argued with each other. But they had an underlying ideal of turning the power of governance over to the people themselves, the notion of democracy, and they may have disagreed about how to go about it.
Well, in your book, What's Next? You've got this about Neptune currently is moving through Aquarius, symbolic of friendship, shared information, respect for individuality amidst a spirit of cooperation. Was that also going along with the Pluto and Capricorn back in the time of
Neptune
the founding fathers?
Was not in the same sign at that time.
Well, what power does
I feel that Pluto is Neptune has to do with our ideals and fantasies, mm-hmm. our creativity, and in some instances sort of our spirituality. It's not so much our spirituality, it's our openness to move into other realms, so to speak, of consciousness. Hmm. So that Neptune is prone in the mass mind to create a kind of a fantasy, a zeitgeist, you might say. Mm-hmm. What is it that we ideally want? And I think it was part of the move of electing President Obama, the first African-American president, and Hillary Clinton almost, as the first, would have been the first woman, that kind of idealism, because Aquarius does really rule the notion of democracy and the ideal of democracy. And we thought we were voting for change. But then what does President Obama do but hire Lawrence Summers and Timothy Geithner?
Mm-hmm. Well, let me go back to the
cabal.
The Pluto in Capricorn, does it, let me see, where were the founding fathers placed in that long siege of Pluto into Capricorn?
Right. Well, Pluto
was it near the end of it?
Capricorn really started when the notion of the discontent among the colonists about being, you know, a subject to the taxation of King George. And in 1776, when we declared ourselves the Declaration of Independence and we went to war with Britain, Pluto was at the end of Capricorn. So it had been going on for quite a while. It's in our national chart at the end. And so with the first year, year and a half of the war, then it moved into Aquarius. But it was in Aquarius by the time the Revolutionary War ended, which is, of course, the sign representing democracy and egalitarianism and the notion, you know, of freedom, of all of these things. So what happened was, while Pluto transited Capricorn, we really went through a very difficult period of rebellion and trying to overthrow the central government of England as far as governing us here is concerned.
Well, do you think that's going to happen here? I know I asked you this.
I think a very similar. It's never identical because the other planets are in different signs. But I feel that we, in going through this depression, and one of the signatures is in 2012 to 2015, Pluto squares transiting Uranus, which right now is in Pisces, and is going to go into Aries. And it was last in Aries during the Great Depression of the 1930s when it squared Pluto in Cancer. So,
but if Uranus is in Pisces, doesn't that mean that we have, like, inventive dreams and sudden changes possible for us?
Absolutely. I think Pisces is a sign that is a sign of altered consciousness. It's considered to be sleep and meditation and rest and channeling and all of these things that are states of consciousness that are not clearly defined in our physical reality.
Mm-hmm.
It rules oceans. It rules liquids. It rules oil. We're witnessing under Uranus and Pisces the end of the age of oil.
Mm-hmm.
And we're technologically, which is what Uranus is about, trying to create energy, you know, fossil fuel free energy technology.
But are those planets actually hitting some of these people in the oligarchy, the guys with the bigger bucks, the power cartel, as you were calling them?
Well,
you know,
yes,
what I mean is, like,
sure. Uranus in Pisces is, by the way, the last time it was there, women got the vote, when it was from the end of Aquarius into Pisces. So we see women. Since 2002, Uranus has been in Pisces.
Mm.
And we have seen the rise of women into positions of power in the world, women prime ministers. We saw Hillary almost got elected here.
Mm-hmm.
We're seeing women rising everywhere into equal positions of power with men. And
so is that
heard on the world scene, and also minorities. We elected our first African American president. So Pisces has to do with people previously suppressed, previously disenfranchised. Now Uranus going through Pisces, the last time it was there in the 1920s, not only did women get the vote, but they went through this flapper revolution.
I love that.
The corsets, and I point that out in my book, the courage that mm-hmm. it took, the first real women's feminist movement that was successful took place at that time.
Mm.
And also the rise of jazz, the genuine African-American music, really.
Mm-hmm.
There was a rich, rich time when African American people and jazz took center stage in this time. Now, in this period, we had, again, women rising in the world at large, and we elected our first African American president. So you saw what were suppressed minorities coming forth into positions of leadership as it was the last time.
Well, also, I'm going to ask another question for the sweeping global changes. Can the patriarchy be giving way to some of the suppressed feminine in the collective?
Yes, I think that, yes, I think that's a part of what is going on, that we have been out of balance. That the notion of polarity of masculine and feminine has to do with a give and a take and a balance we need both male and female energy. Female energy has been literally enslaved.
It has, hasn't it? Yes.
We have been the most enslaved minority group in human history. It's been women.
And even though we're all out working again, a lot of it is in the male model.
Exactly, yes. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I think we need to think about is how can feminine power be more graciously presented as a model in and of itself, which is conservation, like the conservation of land, organic farming, not cannibalizing the planet, but carefully recycling our water. We're in a tremendous age of crisis. We're losing water all over the planet. We are losing topsoil. We're losing forests. We have cannibalized, which is more or less a masculine, extreme masculine notion. Just go out and chop it down. Right. Just go down and go to war with a nation and take their land away. These various things have been the extremism of the male psyche, and the extremism of the female psyche is just to submit.
Or manipulate.
And be abused and used and be a slave and be owned.
And be manipulate so that we don't.
So when you come into balance, the males, which, by the way, this isn't good for men either. They wind up killing themselves and wounding themselves and leading a pretty awful life. It's not good for anybody when you have the extremes. When you bring them together in balance, then you have a very, very positive world when the polarity of male and female is in balance. And in order to do that, and as you pointed out, a lot of women came into positions of power by following the male model.
Right.
Fight your way and compete your way viciously to the top.
And that's another kind of slavery, isn't it? I mean, I know a lot of guys that complain about being successful and be a slave, you know.
Absolutely, Veronica, you're right. This is not good for men to have this model. And you see, the whole thing is about checks and balances. Democracy works, and life works on the planet when we have checks and balances, when we have transparency in people who are in positions of power are transparent and the people know what's going on, when we have a true free press that is not just a corporate weapon of mass distraction.
So what can we do, Linda? I know you have a lot of ideas in your book about what people can do.
Yes, I think that we can create a world without the New World Order. And what my position is at this time is, number one, I think this so-called world order, just like every other empire and controlling entity, are going to take themselves down.
Okay.
They're humans like the rest of us, and they're pretty much fighting each other. You know, they take great pride in stabbing each other in the back if they have to. So my feeling is that they cannot sustain this power. It's going to come down. In the meantime, that means our institutions frequently are going to be coming down in the process. As the money runs out, as you see already, hospitals are closing, schools are closing, fire departments are closing, et cetera, et cetera. Now, what can we do during this very difficult time?
And this difficult time might last like 10, 15 years.
Yes,
right?
I feel between 2024 and 2026 is when we'll really be out of this into using our new models and expressing ourselves on a higher level of consciousness and in a new way. There'll be new paradigms for government, for economies. In the process, in between, I feel that we have to get what I call ruthlessly local.
Okay.
Where we build and live in solar houses, that's architectural solar houses. I have a section of a chapter in my book written by a solar architect that tells, you know, how you can build a solar house or how you can modify your house by insulating it, having south-facing windows, solar collecting walls, various types of vegetation and landscaping, et cetera, et cetera. Fixing the buildings that we live in, I feel, is extremely important, because that will cut down on the emission of carbon, and it will save us zillions of dollars in costs. We can live in our house without going bankrupt, heating it or air conditioning it or whatever. So getting this way, and also getting...
We need some grace as we go through transitions, though, don't we?
Yes, mm-hmm. And the other thing is to get into local organic gardening and farming, if you can.
Mm-hmm.
And there's all kinds of ways of doing this, getting more used to growing your food. There is a resurgence in the Victory Gardens. A lot more people now it's interesting that there are a lot of good things happening very quietly. And more people are getting interested in growing vegetables in their backyards and doing things like this. The thing is to also get together with your neighbors. We've developed in this country too frequently a very every man for himself mentality.
Right.
I want privacy. I don't even want to see my neighbor. You know,
right.
this kind of thing. I want to be, you know, this is very dangerous. We will not survive by just existing in a vacuum alone. You won't survive that way. You need to get together with family members and with neighbors. People may be moving in with each other. A good idea is to build some kind of apartment in your house that you can rent for income, or take in a relative if they lose their house. We've got to get back to helping each other on a fundamental basis.
We only have 1 minute left, unfortunately.
Well...
You can't do it all in 1 minute, but you can watch Linda's newsletter on soothsayer.com, SOOTHESAYER.com. So keep going. We have a few more minutes,
yes.
Or a few
more
seconds.
It's been a pleasure to talk. I think when people start their own businesses, get involved in local community governance, start growing your food and recycling your water locally, and think there are also co-housing or intentional communities that are springing up around the country. We need to get together and change our way out of greed and overconsumption and cannibalizing the planet to living in concert with the earth and in cooperation with one another, which are my new mottos in life.
I love that. And that is kind of a quiet revolution, a phrase out of your book. And I know it's not
exactly
totally original.
And I think it will be. I think it's going to come not from the top down, but from the bottom up, from the grassroots.
And it is happening, isn't it?
It is.
Well, thank you so much, Linda Sherman. I'm always delighted to talk to you, and I learned so much.
It's my pleasure, Veronica. Thank you for having me.
All right. Bless your heart. Good night.
Good night.
Well, that was Linda Sherman, whose book is called What Next? A Survival Guide to the 21st Century. And it really takes you through the details of what's, you know, what the global situation, what are the problems and what are the solutions, or some of the solutions. She has a really wonderful perspective. I really recommend the book, What Next? And check her newsletter, soothsayer.com. You get a lot of updates on that. You're listening to Veronica Entwistle, and I'm an intuitive and energy counselor. I love to do work with you, and you can email me, veronica@veronicaentwistle.com, with comments about Linda Sherman's talk. And also next week on Paradigm Shifters, we're going to be talking to Judith Kravitz on the power of using your breath consciously. The reason I'm having Judith on is because I got her protege, Christian Minson, on teaching about breathing, and so many of you called and asked me about it. So I called her, and she was delighted. So that'll be next Tuesday at 8 o'clock West Coast time, now daylight time. And then this Thursday, I'll be talking to you and answering questions. We're going to do more about the rising of the feminine. What is that? What is the power of the feminine? I'll be teaching some meditations. We use our sacred geometric meditations. But you'll call in, and we'll talk about your situation and how to call the greatest power within you to rebalance yourselves. That's at 7 o'clock on Thursday night. 8 o'clock is Jackie Salvitti and her team with ET Healing and Explorations in Consciousness. Again, this is Veronica Entwistle saying thank you so much for listening. Many blessings. Good night.